Welcome back to Overserved, everybody. I am Ari Vendersky, and I'm here with my really wonderful friend and phenomenal co-host,
Maggie Hennessy. Hello, Ari.
Hi, Marge. It's so nice to see you again in Zoom land.
You too.
And we are here taking a deep dive with the people behind Chicago's thriving culinary scene. Most weeks, we invite on guests a chef, a sommelier, a restaurateur, a farmer, or another one of the fabulous people who plies with all the food and drink that we love to ingest. We bring them on to learn about their story, who they are, why they got into this crazy food world, and what makes them tick, and currently, how they're navigating and surviving during the COVID-19 pandemic. This week, we are really thrilled to have on Tony Dreyfus, the co-founder of Metropolis Coffee Company. He is with us today in the Zoom hot seat. But before we get into talking to Tony, Maggie, you just came off of a long weekend, as we all did for Memorial Day, honoring the fallen heroes of our armed services throughout the years. And historically, Memorial Day weekend, people get together and grill out. And this weekend was sort of different, but not so much as maybe we saw in the news. But anyway, what did you cook? Because I know that you'd love to put together some delicious meals.
I do. So this weekend was fun because I received a farm box from Real Good Stuff Company. They've been doing these, partnering with local producers, local retailers, and local farmers, putting together these grocery boxes with staples, but then also super seasonal ingredients from, you know, our favorite local farmers. So as part of this push, they're asking a bunch of local chefs to demo recipes from the box. So I had some Mighty Vine tomatoes, some organic strawberries, some rhubarb, lemons, from places like, I also had some Publican quality bread. And so I was thinking, like, it's going to be 80 this weekend. I want to make tomato and strawberry bruschetta. And it was great. Like, I did a little demo video. I wore a dress that makes me look like a cartoon character. Demo video will be up on Real Good's Instagram, I think, this week. But it, so everyone can access that recipe. It'll all be available. But yeah, it was like balsamic vinegar, lemon zest, juice, toss the strawberries and tomatoes in there with some basil, take my toast, fry it in like a shit ton of olive oil with some garlic, pile it up. I mean, it'd be so good with like some milky burrata cheese as well.
Yeah.
You know, like you could really, it's just like a gilded lily version of tomato basil bruschetta, you know.
So I saw you post that, and I saw that you commented about the strawberries. Those, were they frozen berries, or were they like of season? Because I didn't think that strawberries were in season quite yet.
So they're they were organic berries from Whole Foods. So it's like a mix. Yeah, because there's also lemons in the box and garlic and onions. So there's like some storage produce, some also just like staples that like Driscoll's organic berries and stuff. So it's really cool. It's like very kind of approachable, more how like real people cook, really.
Right. That's just, super fun.
Yeah. And then it's sort of peppered with these super seasonal, beautiful ingredients. So I'm going to hook up my rhubarb this week. I think I'm going to make pasta. There's a dish I stole from Daisy's, the pasta place in Logan Square. It's like pasta, sauteed rhubarb with bacon or pancetta. And you make like a little egg yolk sauce with lemon zest, toss it all together.
Delicious.
It's delicious. It tastes like spring. So yeah, I had a lot of fun with my box.
So in lieu of, because this entire episode is all about coffee,
I'm not going to
shout out to another local coffee roaster because that would just be a slap in Tony's face. But I would like to give a couple of quick shout outs. You mentioned the Real Good Food box. Mm-hmm. And on Sunday, Cookies and Carnitas, which is a restaurant up in Edgewater, and they've been a staple at Green City Market. They had planned on opening a new restaurant called Brasserie by Cookies and Carnitas on Broadway up in Edgewater, actually across the street from the now shuttered, sadly mourned, Income Tax.
That was a blow.
They, they hosted their first, and hopefully not last, because it was pretty busy, indoor farmers market.
Oh, fun.
And both Nichols and Avram Farms were there. Ryan Poley was there doing his pasta peddler. There was, and forgive me, I cannot remember her name right now, but she was the pastry chef at Cafe Saint Marie. Mm. She was there and made the most ridiculous almond croissant, which I had a little bit more this morning because I'm taking it in nibbles, and a few others. So I anybody who's listening and you are around, I totally recommend going or supporting any of the other indoor farmers markets. Daisy's doing one. Yeah. Where they're bringing local purveyors together to really sell their goods, and there's really good food.
Yeah. What I think is cool about this time is the restaurants that I'm most excited about are kind of encouraging and empowering home cooks rather than, just putting everything in takeout boxes. I think it's I think it's kind of amazing. Either they're doing partially prepped ingredients or just meal kits, or it's such a great opportunity for people to cook at home more while also still supporting.
Yeah.
Providers, cause they all lost their customers overnight.
Everything.
Yeah.
And they still have expenses, they're all still paying rent and they've got food that they need to, at this point, I'd hope that they've pretty much gone through most of their inventory. But on that note, you and I also both participated in a virtual cooking class. You on Friday night, me on Saturday night, led by Erling Wu Bauer, who we recently had on the podcast, chef partner of Pacific Standard Time.
Yeah.
He and his team have started doing virtual cooking classes and cocktail and wine classes.
Yeah.
You did one on Friday night, making a ribeye. They supply all the ingredients, and then you get on the Zoom with Erling, and he talks you through how to cook everything. And so, and on Saturday night, we did a salmon crudo and a soft shell crab amatriciana pasta.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Drew and I cooked together, watching Erling. There were 12 other people on it. And it was so much fun, and the food was incredible. It was so delicious. Anybody listening, I think that, they're going to continue doing this. And I think that, if you have a little extra money and you want to have a fun experience, check that out.
And it's dinner for two. So, for mine, I think the box for it was it's 150. So it's not cheap, but
yeah.
It's dinner for two. It's very, everything's, super high quality. We had a 60 day dry age ribeye from Flagle, was the centerpiece, and these beautiful peas that they had cooked. And, it was a pea and stracciatella salad. And then the ribeye was with asparagus and salsa verde. So it's beautiful ingredients. And it's so fun. You can, you are encouraged to just be in the kitchen cooking with.
Yeah, and you're having some drinks. We had a sparkling wine from South Africa, from Steenberg, a Sauvignon Blanc sparkling wine, which was really fantastic. I'd never had one before.
Really good at teaching too. It's fun.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah,
it was super fun. Yeah. Enough about the local plugs. Let's get into another. Let's plug another local business. Enough already. As mentioned, we've got Tony Dreyfus, who I've known for many, many years. Metropolis is one of my favorite coffee shops. I started going to the original cafe on Granville. That was the original cafe, not the original roaster.
You can Granville. Ask someone if it was the original cafe.
This is true, but we haven't heard his voice yet. But I started going there many years ago, and Metropolis has been a favorite of mine. But Tony, who is the co-founder of Metropolis Coffee Company, is from Madison, Wisconsin, where he studied. He also went to school there and studied philosophy and French. And during an overnight shift driving a cab during college, he uncovered an obsessive fascination with coffee, which led him to pursue a career in coffee. So after school, Tony moved to Portland, Oregon with his girlfriend, Karen, who is now his wife of 20 years, got an entry-level job with Pete's Coffee and learned the ropes of the coffee game. In 2001, he moved back to Chicago and subsequently opened Metropolis with his dad, Jeff, on Chicago's far north side in 2003. And 16 plus years later, Metropolis is going strong and considered an industry leader. Hey. Tony now has three daughters and a beagle-ish dog named Lucy. His obsessive fascination with coffee, though evolved, has never wavered. Tony Dreyfus, welcome to Overserved.
Yay!
Hey. Hey, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. I'd like to give a shout out to all the other local roasters.
Yeah.
One by one. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
No, and go.
How many are there? How many, do you know how many, offhand, how many there are?
More than I have fingers and toes, I'll tell you that.
Okay.
Quite a few. That's great, quite a few. Though. Dozens. Couple dozen at least.
Yeah.
That's great.
Okay, so in this intro, I just mentioned that you had a big epiphany while driving a cab in college. What was that epiphany that led you to want to pursue coffee for your life?
Oh, yeah. Well, I always drank it in high school. We'd stay up all night at, you know, Perkins and drink coffee. And you had to order food, so we'd order one egg. And
kind of, yes.
Like, you know.
Shout out to Perkins. Those I'm not rolls saying were crazy.
Totally. Oh,
and we'd, like, wiggle the egg in the middle of the table. And nobody would touch it, you know. And so we always drank it. But it was, you know, and I used it kind of as medicinally in the cab, working overnights. And then I had this cup and I was walking out and I took a sip and I think it just grabbed me. It was the right day, the right moment. And I walked back in and this poor barista, this like, you know, Madison stoned hippie guy. And I was like, what's in that cup? It's like, it's from Sumatra, man. And so that I was like, coffee can taste different from each other.
Oh, yeah.
So that was sort of what got me. That's where I tripped down the rabbit hole, as it were.
Yeah.
So then you're still digging your way out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe digging deeper. We could.
True.
Deeper. Mostly sideways these days.
So obviously the coronavirus has impacted every single facet of every industry. Specifically, how has it impacted Metropolis Coffee Company? Did you have to lay off staff? Did you lose wholesale customers? If so, how many? Maybe kind of give us an idea of what happened with the dine-in ban starting mid-March and kind of how the weeks have unfolded for you since.
Yeah, thanks for that question. It was terrible. You know, March 16th, we made the decision to close the cafe. Not even for takeout service because we didn't feel that it was safe to keep it open.
Yeah.
We had in years ago, a barista who died on her bicycle. That was the worst day of our history. The second worst day was March 16th when we made the decision to close the cafe. At that time, we laid off our cafe staff and all non-essential workers at the roastery, partially for economic reasons, but also for safety. We had no idea what this virus was. I think we're still figuring it out. But we've learned from listening to people who are smarter than we are that it's probably not a good idea to have a lot of people in you know, that don't need to be there. So right. People that could work from home did. People that didn't need to work didn't. We gave everyone a stipend for groceries, and everyone was able to get, you know, the generous unemployment benefits in Illinois.
Everyone, that's like people who stayed with you and people who were laid off, or?
No, right. So the people who were laid off received unemployment benefits and the stipend.
And the stipend. That's great.
Correct. And how many staff did you have between the cafe and the roaster before the shutdown? And then how many are still working?
You know, we had, God, with numbers, I'm not that, somewhere between 45 and 50. Before the pandemic. And, you know, I'd guess that we're at about 22 now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
and,
you,
go ahead.
I was going to say, do you see now with, things reopening and moving in that direction, are you planning on opening the cafe
Absolutely.
Sooner than later?
Yeah. We're working on our plan for that. We want to make sure that we can do it safely.
Smart.
And, you know, we're working with our cafe staff. We're not necessarily, you know, we want to make sure that they feel comfortable too. Because I think when people talk about reopening the economy, let's be clear about what that means. The people that are on the front lines of that are the, you know, typically the lowest paid people in the country. So are we using them as a shield to protect our economy? I don't know. I want to make sure that we're not complicit in something like that, that we're doing everything we can to do it safely. So, you know, we are primarily a wholesaler. We roast coffee for a variety of businesses, but the majority of the businesses that we roast for are cafes, restaurants, offices, hotels, universities, businesses that are currently closed or that are only marginally open at best. Mm-hmm. So we luckily, I think, had a good foothold in grocery. So we've been really working on that and kind of being better at that, growing that segment of the business. But really, our business changed overnight from a company that did mainly 5-pound bags for other people to brew to a company that did mainly 12-ounce bags for, you know, individuals to brew.
It's interesting. So, I didn't know until I was reading something recently, but that green, aka pre-roasted coffee beans, can survive up, what is it, something like a year if they're stored correctly. So that must have helped you compared to others that, you know, were dealing with sort of immediately perishable goods to offload. I'm not sure, like, did you slow shipments and rely on reserves? And then how is that impacting the growers that you buy from?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yes, you're right. Green coffee doesn't spoil. And I think with anything with this pandemic, it proves how connected we are to each other.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, like when a restaurant stops buying butter, you know, the dairy farmer is injured, and who supplies the dairy farmer, but, you know, so on and so forth. So with us, first of all, we froze taking coffee, but we have positions, you know, we write contracts for coffee. So we say, when we buy a coffee, we're not buying coffee that already exists in a warehouse with our name on it. We're you know, deciding to write a contract against it. Sometimes that's, you know, tens of thousands of pounds or more, sometimes 100,000 or more. So when we stop taking deliveries of that, sometimes there are penalties. In this case, it's like every roaster in the world is doing the same thing simultaneously. We were lucky enough that for Metropolis, we were able to rework some of those contracts, but the effects on the producers are pretty unclear so far. Yeah. You know, I know that coffee is moving. Like, you can buy coffee, they're shipping coffee, they're receiving coffee, it's going on trucks and showing up at warehouses, but the demand for it is way down, I assume, you know. Yeah. I mean,
Are you saying from the consumer side or more from the wholesale side? Because I actually just got I saw an article this morning from one of the restaurant trades talking about how the wholesale side of it, of coffee, has been hit really hard. You know, and as you said, that's a big part of your business. So, I mean, are you seeing an uptick in, you know, more on-premise at supermarkets or like direct sales through the website? I mean, how are you kind of making up sales?
Yeah.
Thanks. Yes and yes. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, those of us who had lives and went out in the world and did things, we kind of got used to getting coffee made for us everywhere. You know,
we'd
get breakfast and they'd come and fill our cup multiple times. You go to the cafe, they bring it to you in a cup, and at work it's made and you grab a cup. And I think all of a sudden people are like, whoa, I need to do this myself. So there are people like me that are like, you know, looking up more exotic ways to make sourdough starter. And then there are people that are not like me that want it to be kind of fast and easy because they've got other shit to worry about. I don't know. Can you swear on this podcast? Is that okay?
Absolutely. Oh, yes. Fuck yeah.
Okay. Oh, right.
Fuck yes.
Fuck yes. Indeed. I think that, yes, we're definitely getting so many more orders for consumers at home. Yeah. And right now, pretty much the only place that you can buy coffee is at a supermarket or online.
Yeah. Right.
At supermarket sales have gone up tremendously.
And you had an online store previously?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What's changed about that? Did you sort of evolve the infrastructure or how, I mean, I'm assuming that's grown a lot as well, yeah?
No, it's a really interesting question because The way that we make 12-ounce bags is different than the way that we make 5-pound bags. Really? It takes longer. There's a whole different process for it. It uses different equipment. And so we pretty much overnight retooled our entire production line that was used to knocking out, you know, I don't know, 10,000 or more pounds in a day into something that's doing like all 12-ounce bags all day long. And then you need a place to put all those boxes that are going out the door. You need to make sure you don't mix them up and that the right label gets on there and everything. So we brought our production team, and they're amazing, and kind of rethought it. We said, look, if this is the future, or at least this is the present, like, how are we going to make this work? Yeah. So everybody pitched in, and we got it. You know, it's still evolving, but it's so much better than it was on day one. But yeah, it's a little sink or swim, or, you know.
Yeah, you have to. You're forced to make these changes all of a sudden.
Yeah, but it's you know, for somebody, I love, I recognize not everybody's like me, but I really love change. You know, I'm discovering that most people aren't like me, but for me, it's really like exciting. Yeah. I'm like, oh, we can rethink all of it, you know?
Yeah.
And other, but I really need to be careful, and because most of the people that I'm around are still mourning the loss of the past.
Right.
So I'm trying to proceed slowly with that and thoughtfully.
It's interesting, though, because coffee, you know, it is this sort of baked in need that people have. It's they say it's sort of recession proof, depression proof. It's part of kind of everybody's daily routine. And thinking about our conversation earlier with chefs and restaurants empowering home cooks, are you guys starting to think about direct consumer education, things like empowering people to care more and brew a better cup? Or like Ernest was asking before we started recording about cold brew and like the right. So it's a really amazing opportunity. You have a captive audience to kind of educate if you want to. I don't know if you want to or if that's like the thing you're after.
And are you hearing from more people about ways to brew the perfect cup or pot of coffee at home?
Yeah.
Let me splice that question a little bit.
Yeah.
And say,
sorry, we're caffeinated and we have a lot of questions. No.
Hey, slow down, people.
I feel like we all need to talk about what Metropolis is.
Tell us everything right now.
More will be revealed. That's all I have to say right now. No.
Such a tease.
We've been doing all kinds of how to make coffee stuff for many years on videos. And I think that by splice the question, what I mean is I think that some people want to know how to make the perfect cup and some people just want to know how to make a cup.
Yeah.
Right. And so we need to make sure that we're kind of meeting people, not, you know, we're not like handing tablets down the mountain or whatever. It's more like it's your coffee, you know, you're not going to fuck it up. Yeah. Like if you want to know more and you want to get dorkier, like there is an endless labyrinth to follow, you know, or get lost.
Right.
If you want to just make a cup of coffee, there should be, you know, pretty cut and dry, simple information for that too. So, you know, we're the, to use like, I've been getting into bread, you know, there's like the Ken Forkish approach where like it's really dorky. And then there's the artisan bread in 5 minutes a day approach. Yeah. And they both have their audience, you know? So I think when it comes to people asking about it, I guess I find that people are asking both. Some people want to really get into it and some people just want to get it done. So we are working on and putting out there already some information to hopefully meet both those kind of people and products too that suit both. So, but I think the message is like, if it makes you happy, it's good. Yeah. You know, there's not necessarily like only one way to do it.
I respect that so much because it's ultimately respecting what coffee means to each individual person.
Right.
And it's based on so many factors, you know, what their budget is or just what they like and like, oh, I like to put cream and sugar in it. And like some people will say that's bad and it like taints it and you should be ashamed or something, you know, there, because coffee has that sort of inherent snobbery
for sure.
Taste, yeah.
Like wine or, and for sure, like you said, there are, if you want to go down those rabbit holes, by all means, there are resources to do so. But for a lot of people, it's like, if I could inject it into my veins, I would do it. I just need it every day, right? So it's such an interesting range of human beings that you're selling to and trying to make happy. That's amazing.
For sure. Yeah. And I think that what with whatever this is, you know, 20 years in specialty coffee, I'm a little bit agnostic at this point. I mean, I'm a licensed Q grader, right? Like I did a 6-day sensory exam with, when I took it, like over a 90% failure. Like I'm well steeped in the snobbiness.
Good news.
I didn't mean to laugh horribly. you want to go there? We can go on puns.
Please.
Punny all day.
Yeah, yeah. And a filter. Can we filter that last one out, Ernest?
Try to be ill. He's here all week.
You know,
I'm gonna put a drum. I'm gonna put a.
Do it. Yes.
No cymbal. No cymbal.
Dude, I'm not good.
It's like, what is it about coffee that really makes me happy? Well, it makes me happy. It doesn't necessarily make other people happy.
Right.
And I guess really when it comes down to it, what I love about it is the people, and the more, you know, that coffee can benefit people, the better. And that doesn't mean the more that coffee can benefit itself or what I think is a good cup of coffee is better. It means the more it can benefit more people is better.
Absolutely. It makes me so, and I feel like I'm sorry, Ari, but I can't help it. Now, this feels like it leads into the next question, and I'm just going to do it. But
are you taking the mic, the one that I brought up? No.
No. This okay. I think it's like a good point to switch to maybe getting into the meat of what Metropolis is about, because yeah. When you were initially emailing with Ari, there was a quote from you that, you know, is sort of about making greater coffee by listening to what makes people happy. You said, sometimes that means pure, unadulterated, single origin coffee scoring way up high on the cupping ladder. Sometimes it means a convenient dark roast sachet of cold brew that takes very little effort. So from your view, and given, you know, 20 years of experience in this field, are those things traditionally mutually exclusive for a coffee company? How do you prevent sort of this aforementioned exploitation of supply chain and the end consumer, and kind of produce something that satisfies both that high on the cupping scale, but then also sort of that lower, you know, lower effort, please people, more people.
I think that is the nut of the whole thing is that you can't exploit either side. When it comes to how people regard our company, I guess I'm, I think, you know, Danny Meyer can do Shake Shack and whatever, you know, Michelin 9-star restaurant he's doing today.
Right.
But when it comes to the making sure that coffee both benefits the consumer and the producer, that's table stakes, I think. Mm-hmm. We are fascinated with trying to learn about what that means, not making assumptions like we used to in the way that coffee benefits consumers, and also not taking for granted that people will necessarily trust that when we say that we're not exploiting producers, that we're not. So this is very complicated because coffee is built on exploitation, the coffee trade traditionally. Not, I mean, it doesn't mean all coffee is exploitative. It's not, but there are, you know, the vast majority of coffee farmers are not doing great, you know, especially with depressed coffee prices. And then there's, you know, forget about the health issues with, you know, spraying crops and whatnot. So it's very complicated. I think that the path forward for us on that is certifications. That you shouldn't trust us to tell you that we're not exploiting producers. You should trust that there's an independent third party, like fair trade, for example, which is not perfect, believe me, but at least it's not Metropolis telling you that Metropolis coffee is not exploitive. As far as for the consumer, we're a lot more open to hearing what people have to say about what makes them happy with coffee. And trying to make their dreams come true if it makes sense for the rest of the supply chain. I mean, I can't make a $2 pound of coffee that makes everyone, it benefits everyone, you know?
Right.
But that doesn't mean it has to be a $25 pound of coffee either.
Right. Interesting. You also wrote in that email to me last week, we set out to reconsider what great coffee means. Nowadays, we believe that if the coffee benefits everyone it touches, the producer, the roaster, the retailer, the customer, then it is great. The more benefit, the greater the coffee. This definition extends beyond flavor to economic impact. And I feel like that's kind of, you're talking about that right now, but kind of taking it from the literal meaning of all the steps of where the coffee is being touched. You know, let's dive into that a little bit, you know, especially from a safety point of view. You know, coffee shops have been closed. People still want their coffee. You still want to produce coffee. Your workers still want to go to work and get paid. What precautions have you taken at the roaster, especially being such a large operation and servicing as many accounts as you do?
Thanks. Yeah, it's the first thing we did was, like I said, we thinned out. Make sure that we didn't have too many people in too small a space. We also stopped doing delivery. We decided that UPS is probably smarter than we are as far as like making sure that they're not spreading COVID by doing deliveries. We took our cues from, you know, from the CDC on how to operate a safe workspace, you know, with masks and gloves. We provide PPE for employees, fun PPE. You know, we got cool masks. we, you know, got some of the Koval sanitizer. We have it all over the place. We have contactless pickup for people that want to come to our roastery to pick up. So, I mean, I think it's a lot of small things, but the biggest thing I think is keeping a social distance. You know, my understanding, wash your hands all the time. Shanna, our facility manager, has been hanging signs all over the place that say, first of all, she gave everyone a tape measure, and then she hung up a sign that day that said, you should stay 6 feet apart. If you're unclear about what 6 feet is, imagine a dead relative standing between you and the person you're talking to.
Oh my God, so, that's so, you know, grim.
Things like that. Yeah, no, it's horrible, you know.
Powerful. All right, okay.
Or like, you know, wash your hands. I mean, starts getting pretty gross, but yeah, she's...
So in what ways, though, are you also, because you're a pretty positive person and you have a really good outlook on life, it seems. And so, like, in what ways are you helping to keep morale up and keep people smiling coming into work amidst all of this heaviness?
Your sample is too small on me being a positive person. Sorry. I am. And but that doesn't mean that positive is not Pollyanna, or shouldn't be.
Right.
I think really positive for me is asking everyone, you know, how are you doing? How's your family? How's your health? How's your mental health? Is there anything that I can do for you or that Metropolis can do for you? You know, really, because I think that I've learned that everyone's going to have a day that they freak out, and it's not going to be on the same day, and there's not usually a good reason for it. Right. And so we all need like a lot more understanding where everybody's coming from now. I mean, sometimes you see just somebody like crying in a corner and you're like, you know, I think that's what I've learned is nobody wants to be convinced that everything is okay. They just want somebody to talk to if it, you know, where they're at.
Yeah.
That's actually, it's a really good point. Cause I think that we forget that, you know, amidst all of this, we want to just kind of live and go back to quote unquote normal. But we're also dealing with different emotions throughout the day, and people forget that it's okay to feel sad or hurt or heavy. And if you need to take a second to just kind of go sit, and if, you know, just talk to somebody, obviously socially distanced, or if it's somebody you're comfortable with, that's, you know, in your circle, you know, just have a hug. And it's just, you know, we need those moments to just kind of like be like, shit. So
it's a nice verbal hug.
Do that. Yeah.
Right. Socially distanced hug.
Right.
drive-by beef hug.
Right.
I have
that's a theme from an earlier episode, Tony, yeah. When Maggie got a delivery from John Mannion from his new Elche butcher, and we dubbed it a drive-by beef hug.
So yeah. Did he throw it out the window?
This is general theme of of this COVID time. Our Zoom episodes, the general theme is drive-by beef hugs for everybody.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
I want to kind of shift a little bit and understand, because part of the way you've grown your business has been through these collaborations, these like brewing with other cafes, other businesses, restaurants, things like that. Yeah,
you said brewing, but I think you mean roasting.
Yeah, I did.
Well, we also work with beer brewers, so.
Oh, really?
You know, yeah, it works out great.
Really?
Oh, very cool.
So I kind of want to understand sort of that aspect of your business, kind of partnering with places like Jumping Bean, which I'm drinking the coffee from them, that collaborative coffee right now.
It's so good.
It tastes like smooth milk chocolate. And then Sawada, Yolk, can you maybe help us understand kind of how that started and then what's been the impact of COVID, on those partnerships as well?
Yeah. I love doing that because I'm a people pleaser. And, I think that those collaborations, I don't know if collaboration is the right word. I mean, I think that, Maybe it is. Somebody has, motion timed lights.
Went into the dark.
I know. Keeps happening every once in a while. I'm a little bipolar that way. People have a vision for how coffee fits into their business. And we use our expertise to realize that vision, as long as it benefits everyone from the producer on through. So the Sawada one is really interesting. The Project X. Do you guys know that story? Have you got a minute?
That's what I'm drinking right now.
Please tell it.
Okay. So we had a sales guy. This was this was years ago, who would hang out at the Clipper, and he would drink coffee there with, the barista. Who, at the Hogsaw Cafe around the corner there, and learned that they were getting coffee from another local roaster, but that they weren't thrilled with it, and that they had just been to Japan and tasted a coffee at a cafe in Tokyo that they were all gaga over and would love to reproduce that, but, they can't get it done. And so we started sort of a secretive project that we called Project X, where we found out the name of the cafe, which was Hiroshi Sawada's cafe. We found out what coffee they used, and then we air freighted in a bunch of bags of it to our roastery, which was in Andersonville at the time. And then we dissected it. We looked at it with magnifying glasses. To see what the beans looked like, because you can kind of tell a little bit. We used a laser color analyzer to see how roasted it was. We cupped it. We pulled shots of it. We analyzed it 7 ways from Tuesday, and then.
Wow.
Then we got to work figuring out how we could reproduce that or reverse engineer it. And we put together some batches and we brought it over to Hog Salt, and they, Hog Salt Hospitality with, that group. And they loved it. And so we started working with them on it. And basically they had a vision. They couldn't find anyone because everyone's ego sort of got in the way. Like, that's not what coffee is supposed to be. It's not supposed to be, this. It's supposed to be what I think it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't what made them happy. So when we were able to put that together, and it's even progressed now where it's used at all the flagship Restoration Hardware accounts around the country, was a consultation by Hog Salt and Sonikoff. And then now, we have even sourced unique coffees where the Hog Salt team has a relationship with the producers, where they know where the coffee's from, they can communicate. It's pretty neat, So in a way we kind of get the fuck out of the way, but use our expertise to sort of hold up what other people want. And because of that, the farmer sells an awful lot more coffee. Hog Salt has what they want. We benefit. It's tons of coffee, and it's a really cool, unique coffee that I think was outside of what we had considered to be our wheelhouse when we got started on it.
Yeah.
So that's just one example.
That's fascinating.
But it's a cool story, right? And I think, you know, you're right. Collaboration is probably exactly right. We're not trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. We're trying to fit a round peg into a round hole.
Right. And how, what, has there been any impact of coronavirus on, like, what happens to that supply? Where is that sort of then moved to the online store for direct purchase? How did, what happens?
So that's, everything's affected by coronavirus.
Right.
So like take Yoke, for example, Yoke breakfast restaurants, Taki,
right.
You know, is offering sort of limited service in a lot of his markets, like Chicago. Some are a little more open, like Florida, but the volume is way down. Mm-hmm. And same with Project X, although it's not down. I mean, at first they stopped operations completely, and then they, you know, went to gauge safety. And so to support that, we, you know, sold some through our site and gave them some proceeds. But they're also like, this is kind of neat. This is, do you know these guys, Percolator?
No.
Percolator Cafe? This would be good for you, Ernest. Then you don't need to brew it at all. You just pull it out of the fridge and drink it.
Are they in, they're not in Chicago, right? Are they?
They are in Chicago. Yeah. Yeah. They're
where?
Over on Irving, kind of, you know where Portage Park is?
Yeah.
By the pool. They're over there. Great cafe. Joe and Melissa Bassalone. They also had like a record shop next door that they owned, and then a resale shop across the street. When they closed their cafe and, you know, gave away all their food, they were like, well, we have this list of hundreds of retail customers, and they flipped it around and started home delivery of bags of coffee and also, you know, buckets of cold brew. So I think people are getting a little bit creative, but it's, you know, clearly it's down. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's
right.
Significantly down.
I look forward to doing my part now that I know about the buckets of cold brew.
That's right.
I'm going to stimulate this economy by my damn self.
You want to use one of those bubble tea straws because more faster.
Yeah. And the more cold brew you drink, the more caffeinated and energized you're going to be, and the more you're going to do for the economy. Ernest is going to be on a roll.
I'm telling you, I'm going to mess around and run for president.
So Tony, you do the coffee for them as well?
Yeah, mm-hmm, we sure do. And so it does slow down the supply. It does mess with the livelihood of the farmers. I guess the trick is to not just throw up your hands and say, I give up. It's to, you know, it's to keep plugging away and see what incremental steps there are that you can take. You know, it's not all one or zero, yes or no. There's a lot of gray area in there, you know, just keep trying to move the needle, I guess.
How do you feel since we're sort of a ways away from returning to cafe culture, which has become such a huge part of the way people drink coffee in cities and, you know, working from, and then especially with like the open plan offices kind of on hold as well. I mean, how do you feel like, or are you starting to see what maybe some of the long-term effects on coffee culture in our city might be, or is it still too early to even, or are you starting to see some changes maybe take shape in the way we kind of drink coffee culture? Because it doesn't go away, it just changes form, sort of, right?
Yeah, and in what ways are you thinking about innovating on that and how you can get people the coffee that they need and want?
Yes, I don't know. I wish that I knew.
Yeah,
it would be so much easier. You know, I really do.
Wouldn't that be nice?
It would. I think that, you know, like, we're kind of taking it a day at a time right now. And I think that one thing I've realized is that humans are pretty adaptable.
Mm-hmm.
And also have terrible memories. So I'm sure that in like 6 months, the cafes will be packed and, you know,
yeah.
Not 6 months, but 16 months or something.
Right. Whatever.
Actually, I don't know. So I guess I've learned that, or I'm continuing to learn that if there's something that feels permanent right now, it probably isn't.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that, cafe culture continues beautifully. I'm inspired that people feel powerful enough to make coffee at home, and will continue to do so. I think that we've adapted by pursuing the basically one channel available to us, which is grocery, with sort of a whole bunch of different stuff that we're working on. We've started what's called direct store delivery, which is actually going in and delivering to grocery stores. It's like the one kind of delivery we do now, where we like fluff the shelves and make sure they have enough of everything. And we're trying to think about products that we can sell that help, support that, I guess. And it's pretty neat. It's forced us to really think about, who we are and what makes us different. Because you can't just rest on your laurels in a pandemic, you really have to. And you also can't count on internet sales, because I think that when life goes back and reverts, if that's all you've been counting on, you're kind of screwed, because people aren't going to order coffee delivered to their door when they can get it at the cafe or the grocery store. Once it's safe to go outside again, which, who knows when that is, but.
I mean, based on what we saw this past weekend all over the country, people are feeling pretty good about going out again.
It's just kind of like, exactly.
Yeah, it's kind of terrifying. But you guys have been around for, almost 20 years, and you've clearly made a big impact into Chicago's local coffee culture, but I believe you have clients in other cities as well. And, based on the conversation that we've been having, you work with a number of different restaurants and cafes and you supply them with either Metropolis branded coffee or, you do these partnerships, collaborations with different places. My point is that you guys have grown into a very large operation, and you really started as a very small independent shop and have grown into one of the largest third wave coffee companies in the country. But to me, and in my, this is solely just my own observation and my opinion, you still seem to feel quote unquote small and like an independent business without being a corporate behemoth. Was that a specific goal that you had when you and your dad set out to build the company, and how was the company culture structured to reflect that?
Smoke and magic. hold on, my stockbroker's on the other line. Me and my dad own it. He is an amazing, eccentric dude who, his idea for a logo was a guy with the duck on his shoulder. Like that was the logo that he wanted for our company. Like when it comes to being a like buttoned up corporate company, we just have trouble with that. We can't do it. Luckily we don't have any outside investors. We don't have, my dad and I own the company. So when it comes to that, we get to decide. As far as the way people perceive us, I don't quite know why or how that is. Maybe it's the language that we've used or something. I can tell you it's on purpose, not on purpose. Maybe.
Right.
We haven't tried to feel more, what's the right word? It's not professional, because I think what we do is professional, but I guess like putting on airs, like playing business or something. We don't have a lot of patience for that.
I like playing business. but that's, it's great though. It's nice to see that it's not just my perception of Metropolis. And, like I said in the beginning, I've been a fan for many, many years. So it's nice to see that, it's like sometimes like when you discover something that's a newer thing, whether it's a band or a product a brand, and then it grows and it gets to a point that you're like, they're not mine anymore. They sold out. But I don't feel that Metropolis pushes
Thank
that.
Thank you. Everything I learned about life, I learned from Wayne's World. So you don't want to do that. You don't want to do that. Yeah.
Then what does growth look like to you, keeping that in mind of sort of being a little anti-establishment? What does that look like?
I don't know if we're anti-establishment exactly. not to nitpick your words exactly.
That's okay. I love having words nitpicked. I'm a writer.
I think it's what does growth look like? I don't think that staying authentic and moving more coffee through our process are mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
I think that we have to be smart about it. Mm-hmm. And, but that also, I guess we're still making it up as we go along. Can you ask me that question in like 5 years?
Yeah, we'll just do this again. Let's all set our calendars now. 5 years from now, this exact day, we're doing this.
We'll do it again.
There's no like Y2K issues that's going to mess with us or anything.
I mean, who knows?
Who knows, right? Yeah. You're right.
One thing that we've all learned from this experience is you can't expect anything.
No.
Everything is unexpected.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, can I real quick?
Yeah.
A while back, you asked about how this pandemic has affected us and whether, you know, how it's affected us. And I think, you know, I want to really drive home the point that we are not disconnected from all the people that we sell to and buy from. I want to belabor that, beat a dead horse a little bit, because there's a lot of people really suffering out there. And
right.
So if there's, you know, keep buying local, keep, you know, keep supporting, buying swag and, you know, anything you can do, because we are hearing from people that are just, you know, they don't know if they're going to make it through this or not. So.
Are there things that, do you have a GoFundMe for your staff or are there?
I'll send you the link.
Great. We can share that as well in our, when we post on Instagram.
Thank you. We've managed to bring back quite a few, and we expect by the second week of June to bring everybody else back.
Oh, that's fantastic.
That's really great.
That's
awesome.
Our plan right now. So.
That's so great. Did you apply for PPP?
We did.
And you,
we applied and received.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. It is great.
That's awesome.
It's so great.
Yeah.
It's also another thing that's unsure. I think there's a lot of question marks about it, how the funds can be allocated, should be allocated, whether it just piles on more debt. But yeah, it's another unknown.
Yep.
Lots of unknowns.
It's above my pay grade.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, again, I think that to your point, it's like, we can't forget, you know, like I was saying earlier, it's like, if you have a moment that you're feeling heavy, like embrace that. And if you see somebody or hear somebody who is feeling heavy, reach out to them, you know, and talking about supporting local, we've been driving that point home. And I think that we all see it every single day on social media and hear from different people we work with, talk to, read about, you know, just buy the swag, buy the gift cards, give to GoFundMes for a place that you truly love and enjoy, and tip, you know, like tip generously if you are able to, because people are just, they're putting themselves out there. Like you said, Tony, the people who are on the front lines are usually the lowest paid. So whatever, you know, you can do, meaning you are listeners, to help your favorite places around the economy, around the, you know, just do what you can.
Well, and I think this is such a nice opportunity to reconnect to your community from the food perspective and to understand, like, for example, what's growing in the last week of May, which is something you might not have known before. But because now farms are, you know, sort of doing these direct, like weekly CSAs or direct to consumer deliveries, it's connecting people and then seeing sort of those relationships play out, like the restaurants that have relationships with purveyors, and then they're sort of connecting us directly to them. It's really, I think that's amazing. It kind of gets us all in tune with what's happening in our backyard, which is kind of, we have to now, you know, there's no international travel on the horizon, really. There's, you know, it's like, we can scarcely even imagine when we could have our next dinner reservation. So, but there's always, you know, you have to eat, you have to drink, you have to consume coffee. Well, maybe you do, maybe you don't. I do.
I do. Yeah.
If you can, and then you can become acquainted with, right? But then it also can acquaint you with local roasters, because it's been really fun. We've started this segment where Ari is trying different local roasters' coffees every week, and it's amazing. It really helps you to kind of understand what you like. Maybe you dig your heels in deeper, or maybe you expand your horizons. But it's a cool time to get acquainted. Either way,
yeah, it's like when you find when you hear a song that you like, and you discover a new band, and then you want to know more and more about them. It's the same thing with the foods and the drinks that you like, that you discover, you know. And I also just, I realized that when I was talking about the local market that I visited over the weekend, I completely spaced on calling out Regalis Foods, which is, I think they were the ones who were the primary organizer behind it, along with Cookies and Carnitas. And they are a purveyor out of New York that supply predominantly restaurants. And I think you as a consumer can go onto their website, Regalis Foods, and buy directly from them. But they've got amazing olives and olive oils.
Yeah.
And specialty ingredients, conservas, different seafood, et cetera. And they're phenomenal.
So stuff too. It's cool.
And they're really, really nice people. So I apologize that it took me to the end of the podcast to give them a shout out.
This is becoming just a plug local. Let's plug local shit for an hour.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever.
Somebody's got to do it.
Right.
We got to do it. Yeah. So now we're going to move into short order, which is our quick fire segment. So Tony, these are just quick answers, like whatever comes to your mind first. Don't think too heavily on it. You know, you don't have to go into any real long explanations if you don't want to. So first up, what would you be doing if you weren't the owner of a coffee roastery?
Driving a pedicab.
Nice.
Definitely.
And having coffee revelations.
Yeah, you know, you bike around, kind of take in the sights, make people happy.
Love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Make your own schedule.
If you have one, who is your hero?
You know, I've been hanging out a lot with a lot of like old dudes. So I'd say like random serene old guy that you meet, you know, who's like a little bit disheveled and just kind of seems happy. Those are the guys that I've been hanging out with. So they're my heroes.
Oh, I love that.
They've got it figured out. You know, they beat the clock. They're still alive.
You've got something figured out. Yeah. All right. A little less intense. What did you have for breakfast today?
I had two Honeycrisp apples and some peanut butter.
Did you have any coffee?
I did. Does that count? I always think breakfast means food.
How did you?
Yes, of course I had coffee. Of course.
You also need to know as a follow-up, how do you take your coffee in the morning?
I bounce around quite a bit. I actually prep the coffee maker the night before where I grind the coffee and which actually is honestly, like we've measured the extraction. It's a little better if you do it the night before.
Oh.
And measure it all out. And that way, no matter who wakes up first, me or my wife, one of us, all you need to do is go and like push the on button. I do it when I'm making dinner, actually. So it's like part of the flow of the kitchen at night. Yeah, and then in the morning, you just push on. And then 5 minutes later, you have coffee.
Great.
Yeah. So I usually do drip coffee.
Yeah.
Today I did that. I also had some cold brew that I made in the fridge. I had a couple sips and then I had coffee when I got to the roastery. That's more than I usually drink. I can't do that much.
Do you put anything in it?
No. Okay. Sometimes it doesn't mean it's not right to do it. Sometimes I put milk and sugar if the coffee's really bad. Like when I'm at the Jiffy Lube, I like to put milk and sugar in my coffee. Yeah. That is the truth. I love it. The powdered creamer, which by the way is super flammable. If you ever tried that?
No.
Yeah, hold it. Pour it over a lighter sometime. It's amazing.
Whoa. Yeah.
Wow.
Impress your friends.
Yeah.
What movie will you always watch if you stumble upon it while flipping through channels?
Yeah. Johnny Dangerously. Or like Trading Places, like any of those 80s comedies, you know.
Totally. Love Trading
kind
Places.
Of slightly rougher comedies. Yeah.
Yeah.
What is your life motto, if you have one?
I think that you can have fun with pretty much anyone doing pretty much anything.
Aww.
I love that.
Me too.
What song will make you stop whatever you're doing and dance, or at least just kind of bop your head?
We have a lot of dance parties. I have three daughters. And Annie's 15, Camille's 13, and Delia's 8. Yeah. And my wife. And we listen to a lot of kind of top 40 music. Mm-hmm. So I'd have to say Good as Hell, Lizzo.
Yeah, good one.
That one every time, 100% of the time, you know.
Great tune.
Not to dance to it. What is your last request meal, no limitations?
Oh, I'm a simple guy. Probably some combination of, it's probably going to be Asian. It's probably going to be really sour. Actually, I'm not that simple, am I? It's going to be really sour. It's going to have a lot of fermented. It's probably like something Korean. Okay, so it's going to be like kimchi and raw fish and some like sweeter rice and. Okay, bibimbap.
There we go. You got there.
Put it all together. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. This is the best one. Save it for last. What is your favorite curse word?
So we have a swear jar, of course, and it used to be just I was the one putting money in it, but I finally broke them all down, and now they all swear, including my eight-year-old, who says fucking hell, which is adorable. If you've never heard an eight-year-old swear, it's just the best.
I want to hear it. Please record it and send it to us.
I will. She's so angelic. She's got these little fangs, too. Yeah, I'd say... I like, you know, some of the old timey ones, but simple, like fucking hell is probably my auntie from Wales used to say that one all the time. So I'll go with that.
It probably sounds really, really good with a Welsh accent.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Just like seven stages of debauchery, like, you know, intoned through it.
That's it. Great. Yeah. Well, normally we finish our podcast with a segment called Sip This, where we bring something in and we all taste it together. We've all been tasting your coffee over the last week or so. And we've talked about that. But one thing I would like to know is this was Memorial Day weekend, which is traditionally a time when we get together with friends and consume probably too much alcohol. What did everybody drink? Anything super fun or anything you discovered that you enjoyed?
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go.
I don't drink alcohol. Okay. So I'm into making seltzer, and actually I've hacked CO2, which is because it's too expensive at the store. So I actually get dry ice at the Hy-Vee and smash it up and pour it into old CO2 bottles and make my own CO2. What? Yeah, see, that's dorky, right?
Bro, what are you, MacGyver?
No, I need a tutorial. No,
I'm like a cross between MacGyver and like my Jewish great grandfather.
I'd watch that.
How cheap can I be? Yeah, that show sucks. So I like to flavor sparkling water, usually with like citrus and sour things. I live in Wisconsin, so we drink a lot of beer there. I mean my wife and all our neighbors and my kids. No. we didn't get too dorky, I guess is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Except making our own CO2.
Got it. Marge, what'd you have?
Well, I had, another local plug, but Outside Voices, which is a low intervention wine bar that is around the corner from me on Kedzie and Armitage, owned by the Scofflaw Group. They reopened for retail, and so I was there like within an hour of them reopening on Friday. I was like, hello!
You were camped down like it was a Supreme launch? You were like, I need it.
So I was probably the first customer since they reopened, and I bought a liter bottle of this like totally rad orange wine, Valentina Passalacqua or something. I'm terrible at pronouncing Italian things, but it was just gorgeous. It kind of tasted like tea, and I opened it I think Friday night and finished it Sunday, and it was like I sat on the stoop for 6 hours total on Sunday, like started on back stoop, when the sun moved to front stoop, and I had my orange wine. My sister and I were having an appetizer of hot dogs dipped in yellow mustard before we had hot dogs and hamburgers as an entree. Because when we were kids, we used to have Italian sausage appetizer where you'd have it with a toothpick and dip it in mustard while you waited for your other meat to finish cooking. So we had our pre-meat and our orange wine, and life was really good.
I love it.
Yeah.
Ernest, what about you?
I've kind of been on the sober train for a little bit, not for any real reason, just because it was like, if you're gonna be hungover, it doesn't really make sense to just be hungover in your house all day.
Yeah.
To me at least. But you know, I think the biggest thing for me is we got this, speaking of sparkling, sparkling water. We got this syrup. It's like this lemonade syrup. And I swear to you, it feels like I'm drinking limoncello on like a plaza in Lake Como drinking this stuff. Wow. It's magnificent. I got to look up the name of it. It's downstairs. But I'm into that really. That and I made edibles for the first time, which was really sick. I was really excited about that. Ooh, now that weed is legal in the great city of Chicago and the state of Illinois.
Yeah. What did you make?
I made infused coconut oil and made a Funfetti space cake.
Oh, I love this.
And how was the end result?
It tasted exactly like a Funfetti cake, and then about an hour later, things got wonderful.
Oh, yes. Love this.
I'm glad you said wonderful and not like
weird. No, yeah. I had a blast. Right? I had a blast.
Perfect.
I watched Goodfellas again. It was great. Nice.
You have a whole lot living in 2E, whatever apartment it is. I love that line.
Ari, drink.
So one of the things, I'm going to do two quick things, but one of the things, speaking of like lower ABV or seltzers, like one of the things that I've really been enjoying lately is using kombucha and using that as a base with usually more of a bourbon or a rye and adding a squirt of lemon. It's actually a really refreshing drink doing that on the rocks. But you guys know my love for agave spirits, and here comes another local plug. So the Diaz brothers, so Rob Diaz, who's worked in the local hospitality industry for many years, and his brother Jesse Diaz, who is the founder of Dark Matter Coffee, mm-hmm. They partnered up and they launched Diaz Brothers Agave, and they recently hit the Chicago market. It's their first market, and they're moving into a few other markets over the next few months, and they have four different expressions. They have two pechugas, which are a little bit more in-depth iterations of mezcal. They're all mezcals. Sorry, I didn't mention that. They have their espadín, which is kind of like their entry level, and then a tobalá. And I love a Oaxacan old-fashioned, and I used the tobalá in my Oaxacan old-fashioned with, you know, just Espolón Reposado tequila, which is a less expensive, but still like a really fantastic tequila, with some orange bitters and some agave syrup. And I did it on the rocks. I just had one, and it was one of the best Oaxacan old fashions I think I've ever had. Ooh, it just, it's like the depth of flavor was really fantastic. So shout out to the Diaz Brothers Agave, and you should look for it in your local markets.
We should start doing a running tab of how many places we've plugged over an hour of recording.
That's what we're here for. We
last
want,
plug
you know.
Of the day is for Metropolis for amazing
absolutely.
Tony Dreyfus. We so loved having you. We so loved digging into your little brain a little bit. Thank you so much.
You guys are so nice. Thank you. Thanks for all the great questions. For caring enough about what's going on to ask such great questions. Thank you. The love fest continues.
So thank you, Tony. Thank you for the many years of knowing each other to produce great coffee with a wonderful spirit. Thank you for joining us, and everybody out there. Thank you guys so much. We hope you're staying safe, and thank you for tuning in. And we will see you the next time on Overserved.
Yay.
I do my hair toss, check my nails. Baby, how you feeling? Hair toss, check my nails. Baby, how you feeling? Woo, child, tired of the bullshit. Gone, dust your shoulders off. Keep it moving, yes, Lord. Trying to get some new in there. Swimwear, going to the pool. Come now, come dry your eyes. You know you a star, you can touch the sky. I know that it's hard, but you have to try. If you need advice, let me simplify.